This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to our no-holds-barred forum for discussing what's good, bad, ugly, and just plain silly in the arena of doing business with the government. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is best-selling author and social media guru David Meerman Scott. He has a new book out, Real-Time Marketing and PR, and you can find David at either davidmeermanscott.com or my favorite blog, webincnow.com. Which do you prefer to use, David?
Either one. You can find the other from either one.
There you go. And David Meerman Scott will allow you to find all of the things that David does immediately, including the myriad of speaking gigs. And speaking of speaking gigs, I'm going to change the sequence here. You were in Fargo last week.
I was in Fargo, and it was great. I really enjoyed my time in Fargo. I spoke in front of the Advertising Federation of North Dakota, and they were kind enough to invite me, and I was able to make it into my schedule, and had a really, really good time with 150 marketers and PR people, communicators. In Fargo, of all places, Mark.
And you didn't go just because of the Nicolas Cage movie, right?
You know what? I haven't seen it yet.
I think I saw it in the 70s, but, man, I can't remember.
I don't know. Yeah, about the 70s.
Let's talk a little bit. Let's talk a little bit first about David Meerman Scott. This is your seventh book, right?
Yes. It is my seventh book.
Was the first one the novel?
Yeah, my first book was a novel called Eyeball Wars. I don't quite know why I did a novel first, but there you go. That's the first one that I was able to get out of my system.
That's probably the only one that I don't have, too.
I'll get you one.
There you go. That works.
Yeah, and I've just really enjoyed putting the books out, and it's never really been a chore. You know, it kind of just feels like I got something to say, and I say it. And the first one was a novel, and they're the hardest things to write. And crazy to do it first, but that's what I did.
I've always wanted to do one, but I just have no clue.
I'm gonna do another novel, but not until I'm about 70 or 80, and I can really spend time. Plotting it out and thinking about it. The issue with a novel that's so different from nonfiction is there's more elements to consider that you have to get right. You know, you have to get plot, you have to get characterization, you have to get dialogue, you have to get setting, you have to get all of these things right for it to work. And if you miss any one of those elements, then the novel really doesn't work very well. And so, gosh, I spent a lot of time doing it, put it out there. I'm really glad I did, but much different than the six other books I've put out.
Very different from the six other books. The next one was on content, and you actually just wrote the preface for our for Anne Handley's. I don't know her co-author.
C.C. Chapman, and that book is called Content Rules. That came out a couple of weeks ago. Great book. That's part of the series of books that I edit. It's called The New Rules of Social Media Book Series, and there's currently five books in the series. That's been a lot of fun to do because I try to come up with things that require a little bit more detail than I'm able to do myself or that I have the expertise around and create. So we've got a book on social media measurement, which is really important. We've got a book on a couple of books on video. One is how to create a viral video. Another is how to just do videos in general. And then a book called Inbound Marketing. You know Brian Halligan.
Oh, yeah. I've had Brian on the show.
Brian, yeah, exactly. Brian and Darmesh wrote a book called Inbound Marketing. And then the most recent book to come out within the series is this book called Content Rules by Anne Hanley and C.C. Chapman. And it's what we've talked about a number of times on the show. I think this is my third time on, which is the idea that content is really the most important thing when it comes to web marketing and how do you create it. And so many people are talking about that idea, and not that many people are really, really digging into, okay, I understand that, smarty pants. I understand I need to do content, but what exactly do I need to do to create something that's valuable? Unfortunately, Ann and Cece have put together a book that tells you how to do that.
Well, they have, and I have that, and actually I want to have, I think Ann's scheduled to be on with me in a month or so. And for those who don't know, is also the content director at Marketing Profs.
Exactly, yep. She's in charge of content at Marketing Profs, and she's got nearly 100,000 followers on Twitter. Can't argue with that.
No, you can't. And, deservedly so. But, you know, let's talk about content for a minute, because your real-time marketing and PR also is massive on content, and the legitimacy of the content is something that comes into play as well. So what's your take on well, let me throw something at you, and you respond that way.
Sure.
I have a theory that 95% of the people out there are extraordinarily happy with exactly who they are, what they know, business accumulation, knowledge, etc. 4% of the people want to excel and work at it, and 1% of the people bust their butts to excel.
Isn't that interesting, huh?
And it's purely observational.
Yeah,
it's nothing scientific about it.
Right.
But in my experience, that's roughly what goes on in the universe. From a content side of things, the 95% are barely capable of regurgitating what they hear.
right.
So, but you know, how does one come up? People keep saying to me, you know, and probably to you more than me, how do you keep coming up with new stuff?
Yeah. It's a really interesting theory, Mark, huh? I'm going to be thinking about that all day. I'm glad you mentioned that. I think what in creating content, what I've come around to, and what I talked about in this new book, Real Time Marketing and PR, is that a lot of people, as you say, are maybe it's 95%, certainly a good enough number as any, are happy to just kind of find out what the competition's doing and kind of do the same thing. You know, if the competitor has a couple of videos, well, you probably need a couple of videos too, and then you've got parity. If the competitor has got a Twitter feed, well, you know, you look sort of silly. If you don't have a Twitter feed, you might as well do one of those too. And I think you're probably right. I think the vast majority of people are more than happy to do that, because it's fairly easy to sort of see what everyone else are doing and kind of do something reasonably similar. Where the 4% come in is, okay, I'm gonna do something a little bit different. I'm gonna learn something new. You know, the competitor has a video, but they don't have a Facebook page yet. Maybe I'm gonna start a Facebook page, and I don't have anybody to copy from. I'm just gonna have to figure out how to do that myself. And then I think your 1% is what I was trying to get at with this whole real-time marketing and PR idea, is the idea of speed, the idea of doing something very, very quickly, and that if you can create something of value and you're the first person to do it, you're the first person to react to a news story, you're the first company to develop a new product when there's a need in the marketplace, you're the first organization to take advantage of a change in the regulatory environment, or you're the first person to leave a comment on a blog that then thousands of people comment on later on. All of these sort of instant reaction type things. You kind of, as you say so eloquently, bust your butt to make that happen.
That's a technical phrase.
That is a technical phrase, but that also can lead to such amazing opportunities. You know, the Chilean miners, when they came out of their hole, were wearing Oakley sunglasses. And it's so interesting to me that some smart person at Oakley looked up in the sky one day and said, you know what, the sun's really bright. and those miners have been down in the hole for 40-something days. When they come out, they're going to be hit with all this ultraviolet glare, and they could seriously damage their eyes. So I'm going to donate 33 pairs of sunglasses to the miners, and I'll figure out how I can get it to them. And then, well, they'll get them down into the hole, and then when they come out, their eyes will be protected. But you know what? Over a billion people saw those sunglasses. And because somebody busted their butt and figured out how they can exploit an opportunity in real time, they just got a tremendous opportunity to show what Oakley sunglasses are.
Man, you know, I saw those, and it didn't even register. I'm just thinking, cool shades.
Yeah, well, and a lot of people did, but then a lot of other people noticed the little O's on the side, and then a lot of stories started to emerge a little bit later about them, and I wrote about it a lot. I just think it's the coolest thing, you know, when you've got a product that the whole world has an opportunity to see and you're smart enough to figure that out. I mean, I love it.
My guest today is best-selling author and social media guru David Meerman Scott. His new book, Real-Time Marketing and PR, is available literally everywhere. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife.
My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
Since 1886, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, D.C. has been helping children in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Now they are visited by over 3,000 children every day. The club teaches character and leadership development and arts education. No child is turned away for being unable to pay the $25 fee, and the club needs your help to make this happen. Give a gift online at bgcgw.org. The life you lift up today will be the life that brings a better world tomorrow. This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
Did you know that if you're a woman over 40, you need to work out at least an hour a day just to maintain your current weight? An hour at the gym every day without losing a pound? That's ridiculous. Hi, I'm Steve Bostic, president of Right Size Smoothies. And when I heard that, I was shocked because I know that if you feed your body right, you can lose weight in no time. That's why I'm going to let anyone who calls today try my weight loss smoothies for 2 full weeks. I'll even personally guarantee that you'll see the weight fall right off. To claim your 2-week trial, call now and receive free shipping and handling. The number is 1-800-400-0861. And now I've made my smoothies even better because I'm going to guarantee the first 100 callers a 2-week weight loss trial. I'll even include free shipping and handling, plus my revolutionary blender bottle, absolutely free. But you have to call 1-800-400-0861. That's 1-800-400-0861.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my mom.
I'd probably talk about girls.
We'd probably talk about girls.
Anything, boys, school, clothes.
You'd be amazed at what they'll talk about if you give them the chance.
If I had a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If it were real heart-to-heart, I'd tell my parents what I'm going through.
I'd probably talk to him about growing up.
I'd probably tell my dad that I wish we'd do more stuff together.
I don't think it has to be a heart-to-heart. I just want to talk.
Give your family everything. Give them your time. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Newsmakers on the Dorbeck Insider.
Manish Chopra is the Obama administration's chief technology officer.
The ecosystem that's been born out of the open health data movement, I believe, is one of the shining lights.
Of course, it's great having somebody like Todd Park over there.
We've got chief technologies officers at the VA under Peter Levin and Jim Shelton, who runs innovation over at the Department of Education. All have demonstrated results in fostering these ecosystems to not only publish the data, but to do something meaningful with it.
Hear the entire interview online. FederalNewsRadio.com/Dorbeck Insider.
Since 1886, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, D.C. has been helping children in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Now they are visited by over 3,000 children every day. The club teaches character and leadership development and arts education. No child is turned away for being unable to pay the $25 fee, and the club needs your help to make this happen. Give a gift online at bgcgw.org. The life you lift up today will be the life that brings a better world tomorrow. This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is David Meerman Scott, whose new book is Real Time Marketing and PR. Pick it up and read it. David, we were talking about the product issue, and I love this story. The story the book opens with is, well, just run with it.
Yeah, the book, I open up the book with a story about a singer-songwriter named Dave Carroll, and he is out of Halifax, Nova Scotia. His band is called Sons of Maxwell, and he was going to a gig in Nebraska flying on United Airlines, and they broke his guitar at Chicago's O'Hare Airport, and he spent a whole year trying to get compensation to replace or fix his guitar, and it was about $1,500 worth of damage. And after getting the runaround for an entire year, he was shuttled from one customer support rep to another, spoke to people in India a whole bunch of times. Finally, somebody in authority said, no, we're not going to give you any compensation and stop bothering us. So he decided to do three YouTube videos about it. And the first one, called United Breaks Guitars, is an amazing video. It's just really well done. It's a great song he wrote.
For those who have not seen this video, go to YouTube and just type in United, and it'll probably be the first one.
Yeah, and United Breaks Guitars if you need the full thing. And it's just a great video, and it took off. It took off quickly. And, you know, we're talking about real time. One of my followers emailed me with a link on the first day that it came out, and I immediately blogged about it because I thought it was so cool. That kind of feeling in my gut that I've got to get this out, I've got to tell my readers about it right now, and I did.
Well, you had your finger on a pulse that probably told you this thing's going to sky.
I did. I mean, and I'm no different than anybody else. I mean, everyone who sees it says, wow, this is great, but your 1% theory, and only 1% of the people out there are going to do something about it. Most people are going to say, ha, 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 and another 4% might pass it on to other people. What happens, of course, is that this thing starts to take off. It's got nearly 9 million views now, as I recall the last time I checked. But
about 100 of them are mine.
Yeah, no kidding, me too. And as it was taking off, Dave Carroll did a whole bunch of media interviews. He was on radio, he was on television, he did newspaper interviews. He knew that his moment was right now, and he was able to drop everything and have his family members support him so that he could literally spend hours and hours and hours that day this thing was breaking to do the media interviews required to drive those initial YouTube views. So he single-handedly made this thing happen because he was available to talk with people. Now, the interesting contrast is that United Airlines, the whole planet now is talking about how United Airlines breaks guitars. You know, literally millions of YouTube views, hundreds of blog posts, dozens of mainstream media stories, CNN, USA Today, New York Times, and all these people writing about it, talking about it. And United Airlines chooses to do absolutely nothing. They were completely dark. They didn't comment on any blogs. They didn't say anything publicly to Dave Carroll. They didn't do anything. And I don't quite know why, because I actually reached out to them myself. And I said, hey, I'm writing blog posts. I'm working on a book. I'd really love to talk to you about United Breaks Guitars. And they refused to engage with me. I actually did have a conversation, an email dialogue with the person in charge of public relations, who literally refused to comment on this issue. So they completely ignored this. And what a really bad approach, because it makes your organization look like there's no human beings in it. It makes it look like you're completely out of touch if you choose not to engage when something like this is breaking. And I don't know what happened because they didn't talk to me about it, but I have a theory, I have a guess. And I think what happened is that the lawyers got involved, the legal people got involved. And I'm just a guess.
Yeah.
You know, I wish I knew for sure. I'm just guessing.
Safe guess.
And I think the legal people said, no, you can't engage because that will put us at risk for having to compensate people who have had things broken by our baggage handlers. But you don't have to admit guilt in something like this. All you have to do is react like a human. So what I would do if I were United, and this is always true, whenever you're faced with one of these issues where people are talking about you and it's a good idea to react, you should always react in the same media that the news or the idea has been broken. So if it happens on a forum or a chat room, you ought to be reacting in that same forum or chat room. If it happens on somebody's blog and they announce that they talk about it, you ought to leave a comment on that person's blog. In this case, what happened is it broke on YouTube, so United Airlines would have been smart had they done their own YouTube video. I would have done this. I would have had the baggage handlers in O'Hare Airport do a funny video, because Dave Carroll's video is really funny. Do a funny video in return. Now, you don't have to admit anything. You don't have to say we were wrong. You don't have to apologize. But maybe do a video that shows what happens to a suitcase as it goes through the O'Hare baggage system. You know, imagine, I call it a suitcase cam. Imagine duct taping a video camera onto a suitcase, having it go down the ramp from the belly of an airplane onto a baggage cart, through along the tarmac on the baggage cart to the bowels of O'Hare, where it goes through a Disneyland ride of conveyor belts, coming out on another baggage cart, another ride on the tarmac of O'Hare, up another ramp into the belly of another plane, and then have a baggage handler, I'm imagining some gruff guy in overalls with a little bit of grease on them, talking about what happens in the 786,000 bags that we process in a week or whatever it is. And that would have taken off, and that would have gotten a whole bunch of YouTube views. And the whole planet, instead of saying United Airlines broke guitars, would say, wow, United Airlines has a sense of humor, and look what they did as a result of this. And gosh, they're a pretty cool organization. But again, they didn't do that.
No, not likely to. But we had a couple of offshoots here. Number one, it wasn't just any guitar. It was a Taylor guitar.
Yes.
And then there was the case issue.
Yes. And this is such an interesting concept, the idea we talked about in the first segment of you can find some news and then draft off of it. Now, as you mentioned, Dave Carroll's guitar that was broken was not any old guitar. It was a Taylor guitar. And a couple of very, very soon after Dave Carroll's video came out, Bob Taylor, who's the CEO of Taylor Guitars, a company he founded right out of high school when he was 18, he did a video. And he talked about how you can protect your guitar when you travel. Talked about TSA rules, a very, very, very different type of video than Dave's video, but really, really helpful information for people who travel with guitars, particularly professional musicians. 450,000 views when I last checked, and people loved this video because it was providing valuable information about traveling with guitars at the precise moment when everyone was thinking about broken guitars on airlines.
Pertinent content.
Yep. And the other example, another really smart person, Bob Lefoy, who is in charge and is CEO of a company called Calton Cases. They make guitar cases. Again, imagine you're the CEO or you work for or you're an advisor to a company that makes guitar cases, and the whole planet is talking about broken guitars. Most people would say, oh, ha, ha, is that funny? But they said, you know what, let's do something cool. And what they did was they worked with Dave Carroll to create a Dave Carroll Signature Edition guitar case, a product development effort. And it was just a couple of days after the video broke that they were actually already selling this guitar case online, instant product development effort. Again, most people wouldn't do this. Most people would sit on the sidelines.
Are you going to follow up and find out how many they sold?
Yeah, I could do that. You know, it's just so interesting to me how these opportunities present themselves. And they don't come along every day. But gosh, if you have your eyes and ears open, they come along enough that you can transform your business when you're able to exploit them.
My guest today is best-selling author and social media guru David Meerman Scott. You can find David, reach him through his blog. I think you should take a look at his blog, webinc.com. When we come back, we're going to touch on a couple of more stories from the new book, which is Real-Time Marketing and PR. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
A French foreign ministry spokeswoman says an explosion rocked France's embassy in the capital of Mali yesterday. Authorities say they're not sure what the cause of the explosion was, but they know it wasn't an accident. In Mali, a former French colony, Al-Qaeda in the land of the Maghreb is dominant. That group has claimed responsibility for the abductions of five French citizens and two others who worked in a uranium mine in neighboring Niger. I'm J.J. Green.
Can you imagine the size of an aircraft hangar that can hold four C-130 military aircraft simultaneously? Airink can. Airink operates the largest commercial hangar in Oklahoma City. As an FAA Part 145 repair station, Airink's team delivers advanced special mission capabilities, reverse engineering of obsolete parts, along with aircraft modifications, avionics upgrades, systems integration, and more. Log on to ARINC.com to learn more. And now, the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
Federal workers are due a pay raise in January, but some federal retirees probably won't get anything. Raises for federal workers are not the same as the cost of living adjustments federal retirees get. The cost of living adjustment for retirees is all triggered by inflation. But we're in a period of deflation, which means no January increases for retirees. I'm Amy Morris.
Are you getting the most value for your life insurance premium? Probably not. Therefore, take a moment to check out WEPA, a nonprofit association founded in 1943 that enables federal employees to purchase better life insurance at far better prices. WEPA offers premium refunds, a college scholarship program, and most importantly, rates that are much less than the federal program. Visit WAEPA.org to learn more. Once again, that's WAEPA.org.
What's next for cell phones? Fancy editing of high-quality video? Data mining? Not yet, unless you want to carry around very bulky equipment. Your cell phone may do a lot of cool stuff, but its batteries, processor, and memory can't compete with your desktop computer.
The more complex you get with your expectations, the more requirements your applications have on the phone's resources.
Petros Maniatis, an Intel researcher, points to security as an example. He says a virus scan performed within your smartphone would take way too long and gulp power. The solution may lie in so-called cloud computing, where data is beamed
off to a cloud somewhere, to a server machine sitting somewhere far away, and you do the scanning there. So it takes energy, but it doesn't take the energy from your battery.
There are still engineering challenges to syncing cloud with phone, but you may one day carry the power of thousands of desktops in your pocket. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is author David Meerman Scott. His new book, Real-Time Marketing and PR, pick it up. It is not only a fun read, it's extraordinarily instructive. And once again, my copy is it's full of post-its, David, and a lot of highlighters.
Oh, that's cool, Mark. I wish I could actually see it in person. I was on the show about a year ago, and we actually did it in person and in the studio there.
Was it that long ago?
It was a while ago, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll take a picture of the book and email it to you.
Cool.
I should probably do it with new rules, because that one's probably got more tabs and pages at this point. But let's bring this into the government market. Absolutely everybody in the world loves to bash on Uncle Sam and the ridiculous spending that goes on.
Oh, my God, the $600 toilet seat, you know, it's all this stuff, right?
The $400 hammer.
What an easy target, right?
Yeah. But,
the bridge to nowhere.
Yeah, there may be something to that one, but we don't have to go there. Let's talk about $1 million door.
The $1 million door. This is another great story. So a friend of mine's named Captain Nathan Brochure. He's in public affairs in the U.S. Air Force. He actually does public affairs for Air Force's Southern, which is essentially everything south of Texas all the way down to Antarctica. And he got a call from some people who said, gosh, there's a bunch of stories floating around about a $1 million door at Dice Air Force Base, which is part of his responsibility. So he investigated, and it turned out that Matt Drudge had found using, sort of a, Freedom of Information Act is the right term, but in any case, he found a public filing where there was $1 million was spent to repair a door. And so, I mean, all of us can imagine a door, you know, and I think none of us can imagine that a door costs $1 million. So what a great story this is. It's like a $600 toilet seat story. And Matt Drudge ran with it, and then a bunch of people picked up off of Matt Drudge. It was in blogs. And then Glenn Beck talked about it on his show on Fox News. And it's $1 million door. What are they smoking there? And all this sort of thing. So it turns out that, of course, this door cost $1 million for a reason. And the reason is because it's this humongous 150-foot wide hangar door to protect a B-1 bomber that's worth $250 million. And this door is hurricane-proof. It's got a mechanical opening device. It's just an amazingly complex door, and it is really, really, really freaking big. And when you see a picture of it, you say, of course it cost $1 million to fix this door. So what Captain Brochier did was he immediately went to work to correct the inaccuracies in the story. The first thing he did was he dispatched somebody on site to take a photo of the door with a pickup truck nearby to provide scale, then posted that photo immediately on the website of the Air Force, of Dice Air Force Base, and then also quickly wrote up a story explaining what this door was. Then and did that real quickly. And then, you know, within a couple of minutes, then was emailing the story and the photos, which are on the web, publicly available, anyone to see, to the reporters that started to inquire about what was going on. And by this time, a whole bunch of other reporters were also following it. It actually made it into the Pentagon's news, and you know, there were people who cover the Pentagon, the reporter pool there, and then a bunch of people were talking about it. And it's a couple of big fat generals, not fat, a couple of big generals then started to contact the general who was in charge of that area and said, "What's going on here? What's going on with the door?" And but Captain Brochier was able to defuse the situation because he acted quickly. Now, the way that the news cycle works, and you would certainly know this, Mark, and I'm sure most of your listeners too, as something like this breaks in real time, there's a few places that break it quickly. You know, a site like Drudge Report is one. Cable TV, in this case it was Glenn Beck who picked up on it, is another. Blogs are a third. Quick action was able to stop it from spreading further. Had they not stopped that spread, then the next stage of the news cycle would be the evening news broadcasts and then the next day's newspapers. Had they let it go for even another couple of hours without a response, everybody would think, oh, they really did screw up and spend $1 million on a door. What's going on? Was there kickbacks involved? What's going on here? But because he acted quickly, it became a non-story. Drudge Report took it down immediately. It was not featured on the website of Fox News, and the story completely disappeared.
Well, but nobody withdrew their comments. They just erased them.
Correct.
Yeah.
But because of the quick action,
yeah,
it became a non-story. And I think so few people are prepared to literally drop everything. Look, I know I'm supposed to be in a meeting. I can't go. I have to take pictures of a door. You know, not that many people are prepared to do that kind of thing. And had they not, it would have been all over, and we all would have heard about the $1 million door.
You know, I'm surprised that this is not one that that showed up on my radar, because I'm perpetually on the lookout for stuff like this, misinformation put up by quasi journalists who aren't doing any research. They're just posting, you know, very limited bits of information that they see without any sort of verification.
Right. Well, I guess kudos to Captain Brochier and his team that you didn't see it.
Definitely.
Because they were able to eliminate it really, really quickly. And, I mean, in the end, even if it did explode into a big story, there really wasn't anything there because it was a door to a massive hangar.
That's true, but you have, go back to my theory. You've got a massive number of passive absorbers of misinformation, people who simply hear what they want to hear.
If it's exactly
bad,
right.
Yeah, bad news about government, it's got to be true.
And everyone can imagine a door. And when you mention a door, and I've delivered this, I've talked about this in public settings, when I'm giving a speech and there'll be 500 people in a room and I'm talking about it, and I'm talking about a door and I can see people's faces. Everyone is visualizing a regular old door. Nobody is visualizing a hangar door.
Yeah.
And you're right. And so 95% of the people out there would say, oh my God, did you hear about this door? And they're not prepared to do the analysis. Now, fortunately, you know, when all these outlets were preparing stories. New York Times was preparing a story. They weren't going to push it out until they were able to speak with somebody to find out the details. And unfortunately, they found out the details were that this was a really big, massive door that was hurricane-proof and had all these mechanisms, automatic opening mechanisms and whatnot. And they realized, oh, of course we're not going to talk about this. It's ridiculous.
Well, they could have on their media page and just say, you know, certain websites are not known for reliability.
Yeah, they could have. But fortunately, they left that to me.
There you go.
I think I was the first person who talked. I was the first person to talk about the door in context of what it meant for a real-time kind of approach.
My guest today is best-selling author and social media guru David Meerman Scott. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Listen next week for a special edition of the Business of Government Hour's Conversation with Authors series, exploring ideas for improving government effectiveness. What are the benefits of regulatory partnerships? How can new approaches to public-private partnerships enhance food safety? Join host Michael Keegan as he profiles three IBM Center reports and explores these questions and more with authors Russ Mills, Cassandra Mosley, Professors Noel Grease, and Monica Noguera. Next week on the Business of Government Hour.
How can I keep my child healthy during flu season? My teenager's always online. How can I be sure he's not into something harmful? Parents Perspective has the answers. Sundays at 4 p.m. on WFED 1500 AM. Designate Parents Perspective 44415 with a generous donation in the combined federal campaign or online at www.parentsperspective.org. Thank you for helping Parents Perspective work for you.
Hey Eagles fans, tickets to all American University men's and women's basketball home games in Bender Arena are on sale now. Get them online 24/7 at AUEagles.com or by calling the Athletics Ticket Office at 202-885-TIXX. That's 202-885-TIX. Make your plans now to be part of another historic season in Bender Arena.
Catch the Eagles in their Patriot League home opener Saturday, January 8th against Lehigh at 2 p.m.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
Human Capital Management for Defense is a highly anticipated training conference with more than 300 delegates and key speakers from Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, CPMS, OPM, the Joint Staff, UCOM, NORTHCOM, STRATCOM, DISA, DLA, and OSD. Don't miss this year's event to be held on February 14th through the 17th at the Sheraton National Hotel in Arlington, Virginia. Visit the website hcmdusa.com for more information and to register. Mention code FNR for a $200 discount.
The Dorvec Insider, hosted by award-winning journalist and free thinker Chris Dorvec. Engage your mind every afternoon from 3 to 7 as Chris engages the best minds in federal procurement, management, IT, and human resources. The Dorvec Insider takes on subjects critical for an efficient government. Chris's guests answer the questions you want answered. Tune in to hear how the news shapes your daily interactions in the federal space. The Dorvec Insider, weekday afternoons from 3 to 7, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is author and social media guru David Meerman Scott. His new book is Real-Time Marketing and PR. David, this book is really, once again, just chock full of stuff. But we left off on the last segment with a reference to ebooks. Now, having visited your websites on numerous occasions, I know that your first mega hit, The New Rules of Marketing and PR, started off as a series of blog posts that evolved into an ebook. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it's exactly accurate. I as we talked about in the first segment, I wrote a couple of books prior to The New Rules of Marketing and PR. The first one was a self-published novel. The second one was a book called Cashing In with Content with a very, very small publisher. No one had ever heard of either of those books before that. And so I started a blog in 2005, and I thought I was late to the game, but it turns out I was actually reasonably early starting a blog in 2005. About the middle of 2005, I thought, I had this really interesting idea around how the once lowly press release can now be used as a way to generate search engine hits and to hit people's Google alerts and as a way to create content. So I ran this idea by my friends, and they'd say, what are you, freaking crazy? The press release is dead. Nobody writes press releases anymore. And I'm like, well, no, this is really cool, this idea. So I decided I was going to write an e-book about it. Now, in my definition, an e-book is just a PDF document that's totally free without any registration. It's interestingly designed. It's landscape orientation rather than portrait orientation, so it fits really nicely on a screen intended to be read online. And I created this ebook called The New Rules of PR, pushed it out on my blog, and amazingly, in just the first month, it was downloaded over 50,000 times. And I'm like, wow, this is great, because I had a few people looking at my blog, and if my mother didn't look at it that week, I had, only 8 people instead of 9.
Before you go on, do you have any idea how the word spread so rapidly?
I do. I put it out on my blog, and that day Seth Godin picked up on it.
Oh, my gosh.
And he blogged about it. And he said, this is a really great ebook. You want to check it out. The next day, a guy called Steve Rebell blogged about it. And and Seth Godin at the time, and I think he still is, was the most popular marketing blogger. And Steve Rebell then picked up on it. He at the time, and I think he is one of the most popular PR blogger. And he hated the ebook. And he said so on his blog. He said, this idea is terrible. how did I get 50,000 downloads in a month? Well, you got the number one marketing blogger in the world saying that your stuff's pretty good, and the number one PR blogger in the world saying your stuff sucks. That's bound to create some interest. and that's how I was able to get all these downloads. Now what I was able to do then was approach Wiley, our mutual friends at Wiley, and say, hey, I got this idea for a book, and I've tested the concept with this ebook, and it's already got 50,000 downloads in just a month, and here's what Seth Godin said, and here's what Steve Rebell said, and here's what 18 other bloggers said, or whatever the number was. And I'd really like to expand this into a full-length book with you guys. And they signed me right away. And I'm absolutely convinced, had I not done that ebook, this goes back to your 1% theory thing. If I hadn't done that ebook, I would not have gotten a book deal with Wiley. And who knows what I would be doing right now. I mean, I'm just so fortunate that I was able to get something that got noticed by a bunch of people and then got piqued the interest of Wiley and was able to do the full-length version of those ideas. And then that came out in mid-2006, and I expanded it to be called The New Rules of Marketing and PR. And it's now in its second edition. It's in 28 languages right now.
Well, you brought up something that I've never asked you, at least on air before. What were you doing before New Rules?
Before New Rules, well, my first job was on a bond trading desk, and then I went to Asia to open the Japan office of a Wall Street economic consulting company. Did that for a couple of years, and I worked for Knight Ridder. I was Asia marketing director for Knight Ridder from 1989 through 1995, based in Tokyo and then based in Hong Kong. And then I was I moved back to the States in 1995 and was the vice president of marketing of a couple of different publicly traded technology companies, the most recent of which is a company called NewsEdge. And NewsEdge was acquired by Thomson Corporation in 2001. And after they sucked my knowledge dry, they booted me out the door in early 2002. So I've been on my own since 2002. And from 2002 to 2006, when the New Rules of Marketing and PR came out, during most of that period, most of my income was from consulting.
Okay.
And a small amount of income came from writing and from speaking. And today it's completely flip-flopped. I do almost no consulting anymore, and the vast majority of my income comes from my writing endeavors and my speaking business.
Okay, but you still say on your website that you're available to consult.
I do say that,
as time permits.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, I'm glad we cleared that little bit up.
I'm a recovering vice president of marketing.
There you go. Let's wrap up with one more story from the book that I think is really cool. And it, again, it ties back to the government market, not directly, but certainly, with a company involved, and that would be Boeing.
Boeing, yeah, right, absolutely with government market. What happened was that a young boy, I think he was about 6 or 7 years old, drew a picture of an airplane. He'd been drawing airplanes for years, loves doing crayon drawings of airplanes. And his father said, well, you know, why don't we send this to Boeing and see what they say, you know, this great picture you drew of an airplane, which they did. And they got a really cold-hearted mail letter back from Boeing that essentially said, we don't accept unsolicited ideas for airplanes. To a kid, you know, small boy.
Okay.
And so the father, first of all, he couldn't decide whether he was going to share this with his son or not. And he finally got so annoyed that he decided to blog about it and tweet about it. And he said, you know, this is ridiculous. And he posted the drawing, and he posted the letter from Boeing, and he said, this is ridiculous. Well, immediately, Boeing responded. A guy called Todd Blecker, who is in the corporate communications department at Boeing, saw the tweet and saw the blog post and immediately responded on Twitter and said, geez, you're right. This is bad. And we've got to do better, particularly when it involves children. And then Todd made contact with the child's father and said, Would it be okay if I spoke with your son? And the father said, sure. So we love your photo. I mean, your drawing. Thanks very much for sending it in. If you ever find yourself in Seattle, we'll make sure you get a tour of the factory. And so they made it all better. Now, what's interesting about that is how many organizations would actually have done that?
How many companies the size of Boeing?
The size of Boeing, a huge Fortune, whatever they are, Fortune 10 sized company, actually took the time to respond in that way. And so it was very, very interesting that they did that approach to make that situation right. So that says, number one, that they were listening. Because most organizations, believe it or not, don't listen to what the marketplace are saying. If somebody was talking about them on Twitter or on a blog, they probably wouldn't notice, most companies. And then, number two, they bothered to respond. And so it was a great example. And I have a follow-up, and this is really funny. I spoke with Todd a couple of different times about what Boeing is doing. And they did some really cool stuff at the Farnborough Air Show in the UK. They actually had some people on the ground writing about the air show, but as journalists, Boeing employees acting as journalists, talking about the air show, not just trying to talk about their own products, which is fascinating. But anyway, I blogged about this a number of times. And so I was doing a presentation in Las Vegas for a company called SAS, and it was being broadcast live over a webcast, and there was about maybe 1,000 people in the room, and it was a panel discussion. It was me and Chris Brogan and Charlene Lee, and the moderator was somebody, a reporter from The Economist. And so somebody in the audience said, okay, you know, because we've been talking about social media, and a lot of, as typically happens, a lot of consumer companies like Zappos came up as examples. So somebody in the audience said, this sounds really great, but let's hear about some examples of B2B companies that are doing a good job with social media. So I piped up and I said, you know what, an organization I really appreciate is Boeing. Boeing's doing this really great job with social media. They monitor what's going on and do a good job at reacting. Well, a couple of people in the audience tweeted that. And then amazingly, Boeing tweeted back in real time as the panel was still going on. They tweeted back and said, hey, thanks for talking about us, DM Scott, which is my Twitter handle.
Right.
We appreciate that. And everybody who was on Twitter at that conference saw it, and it was the buzz of the conference. Oh, my God, did you see that Boeing responded? And it was like lightning. It was like, duh, you know, show, don't tell. I talk about Boeing, and then bang, they're responding.
My guest has been David Meerman Scott. You can find David at Web Inc. now and davidmeermanscott.com. The book is Real Time Marketing and PR. This is not my day job. Check out my new book, Selling to the Government. You can order it at Amazon or pick it up at your local Barnes & Noble. And remember, you have not been everywhere until you've been off-center. With AmTower.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, Monday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.